This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Welcome to the Osher Institute Distinguished Lecture Series. Before I introduce today's guest speaker, I would like to ask you the following questions. I'm not going to ask you for the answers. These questions are just for thought. What do you call the first 10 amendments to the Constitution? What are two rights in the Declaration of Independence? We elect senators for how many years? If both the president and the vice president can no longer serve, who becomes the president? What territory did the United States purchase from France in 1803? These are just a few of the questions which are on the civics portion of the U.S. naturalization test. One in three Americans who were asked these questions in a survey failed the test. More people know the name of the Three Stooges than know the three branches of our government. And now for our guest.
The Fourth Stooge.
Richard Dreyfuss is an activist American citizen. He is a spokesperson on the issue of media informing policy, legislation, and public opinion in favor of privacy, freedom of speech, democracy, and individual accountability. With an entertainment career spanning more than four decades, Academy Award-winning actor Richard Dreyfuss is one of America's most versatile actors. As a community leader, his current focus and passion is to encourage, revive, and enhance the teaching of civics to American students. He is the founder of a nonprofit organization, the Dreyfuss Initiative, and is leading a nationwide effort to bring back to our schools teaching of civics. Richard serves on the committees for education with the American Bar Association, 12 years on the board of the National Constitution Center, a member of the Council of Foreign Relations, and has served as senior research advisor, member of the St. Anthony's College, Oxford University. Now it is my pleasure to welcome Richard Dreyfuss.
God, you're so lucky. Okay, let's get to it. This is a very interesting day because I thought I was going to be reading something to the people in the first morning's conference, and it turned into a Q&A only, and it was great. And they were teachers. And I will tell you just very quickly that I was in London rehearsing for the opening of The Producers in London, and I was fired because I didn't know how to sing or dance, which I had told Mel Brooks beforehand, but he said, "Oh, who cares? You're funny." And then they fired me before they showed it to the first audience. And it did matter, didn't it? And I had a bad weekend. And then on that Sunday night, I decided I was going to stay anyway. And I had, in 1987, done for ABC a show for kids called Funny You Don't Look 200. And it was about the Constitution, and I was very proud of it. And I decided to do some other broadcast. And I submitted to Oxford an idea for a show, which was the biography of the concept of democracy as told by Charles Dickens. So it would be like, democracy is like David Copperfield, and he had a fragile birth and a very hostile, contemptuous childhood, and he was dismissed and scorned, and then he had a shocking victory, and he carried always the seeds of his own destruction. And while I was there, I realized that I didn't want to do that at all. I wanted to really do it, because when Horace Mann, we all had Horace Mann in some school in our school districts, right? Well, do we know why? Does anybody here know what he did? Pardon me? It wasn't just education. What he said was, we had to teach the majority, people who were the majority of mankind, how to be the rulers of a country. Because we were saying that the common man was sovereign, and that they were the final arbiters of political power. And no one in all of history had ever asked any common man to do that. And there was no precedent for it. And when the monarch of a certain country wanted a library, he just turned to his cousin and said, get me a library. And no one knew how to be a sovereign ruler. And if you were actually taught, or if you actually learned how to read or write, or do sums, they would chop your hand off or kill you. And that's not an exaggeration. And so, when we started our nation, we freely gave away as a gift to mankind the things that had been kept from them on purpose, and we all had lived under a curse that was so well known that no one ever had to mention it. And the curse was, you and yours will never rise. You're a serf. Your grandchildren will be serfs. And my heel will always be on your neck. And that was the truth of this whole world for 6,000 years, until America said, wait a minute. Wait. If you can get here, if you can make the journey, we give you physical mobility, intellectual mobility, creative reach, the right to try and fail if you have to, or try and succeed, and you get the reward. You have the right to think and speak and worship as you wish. Nobody had ever done this in 6,000 years. So it is very valid to say that that was the single most important political message in the history of our species. And the only reason that they didn't come over here and kill every last man, woman, and child was because we had already, by coincidence, taken out the taxi shuttle service of the British Navy, and they couldn't get here. But a few years later, when Napoleon appeared, they attacked France without waiting. Without waiting. Every country in Europe. And Napoleon, who was in fact a real radical and delivered to the common people of Europe what we were giving away here. He tried to placate them by saying, oh, look, I'll put on your costume. I'll play your emperor if you want. And they didn't care. They were going to kill him anyway. And they did. Because he was in Europe. And they weren't going to have that there. And as a matter of fact, in between the two moments of Napoleon's reign, when he was sent first to St. Helena, I think it was, Elba. He was sent there with the trappings of an emperor, and he came back and landed in southern France, and Marshal Ney turned to the Bourbon king and said, "Don't worry, Your Majesty, I will see him in a cage." And then he went down to southern France and saw Napoleon standing in front of 600 French military soldiers. And he got off his horse, walked over to Napoleon, got down on his knees, kissed his hand, and never left him again. And what they were doing in Vienna while all that was going on was trying to revive the ancient regime, the old order, the way the world was and always had been. And to describe that in one sentence, it's kind of simple. In 800 years of European history, six or seven people of the aristocratic class were indicted for capital crimes in 800 years. Eight people. Okay? Common people were killed every day for even looking at a loaf of bread, but aristocrats were not. And that was the old order, and that's what they were trying to bring back, and we represented something new. And it's no small thing to be the heirs of the greatest political message of intellectual freedom that has ever been devised. And I saw it going away. And so I went to Oxford and I stayed there for 4 years and came back and I started talking. I didn't know really what to do, but I knew that if I started talking to organizations and groups that I'd learn. That was 175,000 people ago. And I am very proud of what we have created here because it is the greatest tip of the hat of respect to mankind that the world has ever seen, our Constitution and Bill of Rights and Declaration and Preamble and the Gettysburg Address. There's never been a country like ours. And we alone are kicking it into the Atlantic Ocean for no reason at all. And those of you who are of my generation know that the quality of life now compared to the quality of life then is a shameful thing. That we have allowed this extraordinary system to go to hell in a handbasket, and for reasons that make no sense. The Dreyfus Initiative, I will say, is not going to remain being called the Dreyfus Initiative. Because I just can't stand that idea. At some point or another, it's going to be called the fourth branch. That's who we are. And there are two ways of looking at the human brain. One is that it is a storage facility for knowledge and facts, and the other is that it is a living, evolving thing of great and acute talent. And as it grows and it becomes more capable, so do we. And Buckminster Fuller said that the human brain is the single most powerful tool in the universe, but it comes without an operating manual. And that is true. So these people who started this war of independence from Great Britain and then started this new nation, they had to invent a new way of governing that was not oppressive and that was allowable, and it was something to be admired for 250 years. And we are living in that moment of time when we're watching that admiration disappear. Our initiative sees our brain as the location of a series of skill sets of intellectual tools that allow all subjects in high school to be connected by the exercises of the utility of the mind. The brain is constantly being honed, sharpened, and made more acute. And the agile mind, which was what the Greeks called it, was the name given to the illustration of a brain in harmony with the physical suppleness and flexibility of an athletic body and the real, if less visible, spirit that animated a human life in balance. That definition allows for the confident handling of anything that life throws at us, because life is not pro-American. Life is not pro-Greek. It's not pro-anything. Life is life. It's incredibly generous and incredibly brutal, and it knows no fairness or bias, and it is tough. So the agile mind sought by the Greeks and our founders is active, a living and ready machine that is best kept well-oiled, a starting point for a layered complexity that improves itself as the growth of the brain of Homo sapien takes longer than any other mammal to reach the ability of survival on its own. How many people knew that? If you try to put a 9-year-old kid out on his own, the chances are that he will not survive. A 12-year-old would. What does that mean? It means that we are very little in the hard drive, and everything is software. We learn everything during our lifetime. We learn from our parents. We learn from our teachers. That's software. Every other mammal and most other living creatures come with a fully grown hard drive, and they don't have to learn that much. We are different. No one expects a freshman who takes Spanish or geology to know, when they're freshmen, all that can be learned by a student who takes those subjects every year for the next 4 years. We offer education for the very reason of giving the appropriate time to attain excellence. So the utility of the brain is as constantly improving as is the study of Spanish or the study of history. It is the talent to acquire more and more learned ability to reason with logic, or to grow from an instrument that begins muddled and improves day by day towards clarity of thought and clarity of expression. And then, just around the 11th grade, it can then learn critical analysis, which does need some emotional maturity to take on, because critical analysis is the ability to turn and look at your own mistakes. And that takes some emotional adulthood. When given freedom to explore and utilize the brain's ability to stay light on one's intellectual feet, it prepares students to acquire skills that are doubtless used by everyone, and not just memorized lists of names and dates and battles. The inarguable fact is that we will all, absolutely without a doubt, all of us need clarity of thought, while only some of us might need the Mercator map. And so our approach to the teaching of our young is already ass backwards. To ask man to rule himself is to respect man. And the values of the era called the Enlightenment, which turned so radically away from the traditional dismissiveness about the majority of mankind, allowed those values of individual civil liberties and the protection of the individual against the possible oppression by his own government. It gave legal code. It gave process that had to be followed so that people could not just be bullied. It allowed that the foundation of values that were created during that window of time could be the foundation that all Americans stand on, in agreement in broad strokes with individual rights, legal codes, due process of law, habeas corpus, and the like. We don't have to agree on everything. Americans don't agree on a lot of things. But if they agree on the basic approach of the Enlightenment era, then that is a sturdy foundation all Americans can stand up on from the moment they wake up. And then they can disagree with one another to their heart's content. We want to hold accountable those people who commit crimes based on the perceptions of obsolete notions of who deserves to exercise power and who is not bound by those legal codes because they still believe in things like bloodline and shared ancestral religion or wealth or caste or class. This curriculum recognizes that all of our young are served by a realistic attachment with what we know and are learning about the development of the human brain, so that from kindergarten through third grade, We tell stories, glory tales, and mythology to tie the youngest of our young to the concept of America with love and affection and pride, because that is all that their brains are capable of dealing with. So we root education in the magic and mystery of a love affair. And there's nothing realistic about love of country, but you've got to have love of country and pride in what we stand for, or else we will not have a country. Around the fourth grade, when the young human brain can begin to accept metaphor as a talent, history is introduced in a seamless flow from tales of gods and goddesses to haves and have-nots, to contextually the whole story of man, so that America can be seen and understood as a particular wrenching of the direction of man's history. We were languidly going along in a very easy, comfortable way, killing who we needed and keeping talents away from the majority of man. And then we took history and wrenched it into a completely different direction. And that direction was so popular and such an awesome gift that men and women were allowed to achieve the best that they could achieve, that they could own the talents of their own brain, that they could get the reward that their brain conceives of. That was never, ever given to anyone else. And so people began to come here. They heard about us in igloos and in Turkey and in Bora Bora, and they started to come here. And they continued to come here, and they are still coming here, and they will always come here, because we are a political miracle. And the only ones that don't know what I am talking about are our own kids, because we don't teach this anymore. Man. Horace Mann realized about 40 years after the founders that when they wrote, "We, the people, are sovereign," that they didn't know what the hell they were talking about. And they didn't know how big a Pandora's box they were opening. And so he dedicated his life to the teaching of the training of the civic body. Now, we take the phrase citizenship and we think of it as something kind of la-la feminized. In reality, it is such a revolutionary notion. It is so different than the way it was that by the time he died, 49% of all of the state's constitutions said that they were willing to pay public money for public schools in order to teach citizenship. And now, that number is under 3%. Under 3% means that they're being taught civic light, the three branches of government, and this is how a bill passes through Congress. They learn nothing else. They don't know that they should know the geopolitical interests of their possible opponents. They should know what our natural resources are. They should know how politics really works, which means television and money and pressure. It means a great deal of complex things, and they are not taught any of it. And I'll put it as simply as this. If we don't teach our children how to run this country before it's their turn to run this country, then someone else will run it who is not mandated to do so, like Rupert Murdoch. And that's going to happen unless you stop it. Because if you don't teach civil authority, it doesn't exist. If you don't teach that there are powers that you can have that can say, "Excuse me, Mr. President, you didn't answer the question." If you don't know that you could do that, you're not going to do that. You ain't going to do that. And if you don't do that, then your country is being stolen. I don't know if you followed this, but in the bailouts and all of that, we gave away trillions of dollars. Trillions of dollars. To a group, to a financial industry that was not in trouble. We gave trillions of dollars away to people who said, if you don't fix our company, the nation will fail. And they were lying. We know they were lying now, but they got so much money from the government that their secretaries and their delivery boys that delivered the pizza and the French rolls, they got $5,000 apiece. We are in a debt. We are a debtor nation of trillions of dollars, which we will never get out of. And it has not occurred to anyone that what we need are people of intelligence and creativity to get us help. I asked an admiral when I was putting on my first internet conference, I asked an admiral of the Navy, what is it exactly that you want at the bottom, at the very bottom, what do you need? And he said, well, at the bottom, I want people who can interpret an order. And, of course, I want people who know how to write one. And I said, do you have it? And he said, no. I asked the head of the Wall Street Journal, you don't want capitalism to prevail no matter who, no matter where, no matter what. You want American capitalism to prevail, right? Right. But you know that you're going to get your CEOs from India and Asia in 10 years. Right? Right. Because we're not feeding Harvard and Yale through the public schools. And he leaned back in his chair, put his head in his hands, and said, okay, you got me. And he came onto this internet conference. They know what has to happen. They won't do it. That's how crazy mankind can be. But the head of the Wall Street Journal knows exactly what has to be taught. And he knows that it doesn't cost anything to teach it. He's just not going to do it. Maybe he has a yacht somewhere in the Mediterranean. I don't know. But what I put together is this. You teach from the fourth grade the ability of the brain to learn to reason with logic. And then you teach clarity of thought and expression. And then you teach critical analysis. And then you have kids who are smarter than you. As it is written, the world should be. America takes work. Where did we get the idea that we were given some kind of free ride here? Where did we get that idea? Where did we get the idea that we are being the victims of theft if we have to pay too much in taxes when we pay less taxes than any other industrial country in the world? And George Washington said one thing. I have to tell you that my respect for George Washington has gone way up, and my disrespect for Thomas Jefferson has gone way down in my learning all this. Washington said that the Constitution should always be the central political point of this nation, not political parties, because all they are lobbyists for special interests. What do we have? We have political parties being central and the Constitution being marginal. Does it matter? Does it matter that we have it and we're going to lose it? Does it bother anyone? Or let me put it this way. You're looking at an actor who went and did this nutty thing. Do you think that I'm nuts? Seriously. Do you think I'm nuts? No. Because this is the greatest idea for governance in the history of mankind, and we're kicking it away. And Abraham Lincoln said, the only one who will beat us is us. And that's going to be the truth. If you don't take responsibility for the curriculum of your local schools, and by the way, big surprise for me, the most potent groups of how the United States will be viewed by the rest of the world are the local groups who design curriculum in states and cities. You have more power than the president, the Congress, anybody, because this was saved for the states. You can design a curriculum that does not cost, that is tough, and something to be proud of. We have the greatest idea of the birth of our nation. We have the finest story of how we came to be than any other nation in the world. And we don't know it. And those of us who know it don't give it any credit. But there's never been a time when men looked at one another and said, we can have a perfect government. And we can do it without insulting our own. That's something you should take such credit for and be so proud of. And I find that when I talk to people, they think, oh, let's talk about Hollywood. I don't want to talk about Hollywood. A friend of mine reminded me that there was this new law in California that no one is allowed to quit show business. And so when she asked me what I was doing, I said, I retired. And she said, no, Richard, really, what are you doing? And I said, I'm in education. And she said, Richard. And I said, okay. I'm going for the Nobel. And she said, okay. As if that was a legitimate thing to say. Okay? It's not. All right? It's not. What is legitimate to say is, how can we, as citizens of the country, behave as citizens and do better? How can we send to jail the people who stole trillions of dollars from us and our children? How do we send them to jail? Does anyone want to?
Yes.
Wow, that's the first yes I've heard. Good, because you can. You can send them to jail. Send them up the river. You know? Did you know that when you open up a newspaper today, it doesn't matter what city, you will see story after story of office holders who have committed crimes or CEOs who have committed crimes or companies or other companies, and they've all committed crimes and some of them have killed people. You don't see anyone with a story that says, we're holding those people accountable, we're indicting them, we're prosecuting them, and we're sending them up the river. This is a two-way street, this representational democracy of ours. And if only one way is working, if only those who have can dip into the well and take more because they know that no one's going to stop them, it's going to be your fault, and then your children will say something to you that they never have said before. And that is, how could you have abandoned us like this? Because we're not teaching our children anything. We really aren't. We're not teaching them how to sew or cook or build a chair or balance a checkbook. We're not teaching any of that. And we have to. Because if we don't, they're going to take every dime you have. We have, some couple of years ago, banks that admitted they were illegally foreclosing on our homes. Remember? And they admitted that because they knew that no one was going to say, return them. And no one did. They have calibrated how ignorant they have made us. Why don't we shock them and take this country back? They illegally took our homes. They said they did it. They didn't return them. They took so many of them, they don't even know where to put them. And no one is getting pissed off. No one is getting outraged, except maybe Mitt Romney. No, he's not getting pissed off. No, he's still rich. Those of you who are old enough have seen the film High Noon. Anyone here not see High Noon? You know what it is?
Shootout, isn't it? A Western shootout?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. It's Gary Cooper plays the sheriff, and on the day of his wedding, he receives news that the man he put in prison is out and coming to kill him with a bunch of men. And to his surprise, everyone in town abandons him, and he's forced to face his enemy alone. That sounds awfully like this country right now, except for one thing. In this country, when we abandon Gary Cooper to be killed, we applaud those who will do the killing. I'm an actor, and I'm very proud of my acting. I'm very proud of my work, because acting is an art form that reflects back the truth of its society. And when you realize that all we do now is make sequel after sequel after sequel of vampire movies and werewolf movies masquerading as teenage angst, when you see that that's all we're making, you realize they don't know any better. And so one day, the story of America will be an anecdote. It'll be a little tale that we tell our children, and they will snicker because they'll never believe it. And why should they? I hope I've angered you or aroused your curiosity enough for you to ask me some questions. Does anyone have any questions for me?
Yesterday, I listened to a talk about Al Gore. The person who was speaking was very angry about the lost election and the hanging chads and what happened in Florida, and felt that Al Gore did not have the right to capitulate once the Supreme Court weighed in and said it was not a stolen election. How do you feel about that?
I feel that Al Gore has the right to do whatever he wants. And if the Pope resigned...
But he... We put him up as our candidate, I say our, the Democratic Party. Do you think that he did justice by us?
He did, but he was stopped by the Supreme Court. It's interesting because I had lunch with Sandra Day O'Connor. And I said, the rumor is that you were the one who got so frightened by all of the chaos that you led the movement for that decision. And she said, well, I was frightened, I'll admit that, but I was not the mover and shaker behind that decision. I said, but you were frightened of the chaos. And she said, yes. I said, it hadn't happened yet. And she said, what? I said, the chaos had not happened yet. They were just going back and forth in the legal system that we've all had, and no one was throwing rocks or Molotov cocktails, and the army wasn't arresting people, and we had not had any chaos. Don't you think it was a little premature? And steam came out of her ears, and she got furious with me for that. And then I said, why do you make money the entree to the public debate? And she said, what's wrong with money? And I said, nothing if it's not surrounded by other values, but if it's the only one, a lot of things. And steam came out of her ears again. I think maybe she's on Game of Thrones.
I think we're all aware of the problems of the curriculum where we have to teach STEM subjects because we're lagging behind the world. And you have certainly said we're lagging behind in perhaps more important subjects. What I am upset about is that the state of California now says in order to get a high school diploma, you have to know Algebra 2 and quadratic equations. Well, math was a breeze for me, and I have never used aquatic equations since the day I got an A in Algebra 2, whereas what you're talking about seems to me so much more important. How do you feel about the requirement? And there's a very interesting article in today's paper about it.
Actually, this is exactly what happened to me. I was at LAX, and there were seven superintendents in the corner, and I was talking to them, and I said, can I ask you a question? Could you dispel an urban myth for me, please? They said, sure. I said, is it true that you're asking for advanced calculus and trigonometry to get out of high school? And they said, yes. I said, why? Because I failed algebra 4 times. And I would be the oldest graduate of Beverly Hills High School. So one of them said, well, there are certain technologies that are so complex. And I said, and when the Malaysian dictator offers an American high school graduate 7 times his starting salary, what keeps him here? And they looked at each other, and one of them said, I don't know. What? And I said, love of country, love of the ideals of this nation. That's what. And on my mother's life, one of them turned to the other and said, I think we've made a mistake. And what that said to me was, keep going, keep trying. You'll get something across. You'll win one of these arguments one of these days. And I think they're insane. I think that this whole notion of us being behind in science and math does not take into consideration that they are behind in ethics and values. And that's what they need. And that's what we need.
I don't really know where to start, because when I heard your first remarks, I was just so thrilled that somebody who has some amount of media behind him is really thinking about this seriously, and something is going to be done. But the frustration I have is, would you tell us the beginning and the how you are organized, and where are you going with whatever you have?
Okay. I'm on the internet in a website called the Dreyfus Initiative. It won't be called that later. And that's a curriculum, and it's a curriculum that is based upon the development of the human brain. And it is cultural in the theater, and it is for everyone in the civic clubs. And it's based upon one thing. I love America the way they taught it in the 5th grade. Everyone here got America really good in the 5th grade. And I still feel that way. And I am proud of it, and I don't want to give it up. The civic clubs are in community centers or parks near high schools, but not on the high school, because then the clubs would be obligated to use No Child Left Behind, which is the worst piece of legislation ever. These clubs are simply places where people who like to talk about history can come and talk about history. And then, knowing that there's no possible reason for asking in history tests, any multiple choice questions, they serve no purpose. You can ask, are you getting any themes? Are you seeing any connections between then and now? Are you seeing something then that could possibly be put to use now? And so, on the off chance that the answer to any of those questions is yes, I'm opening these civic clubs, which is just each person who's in the club pays 15 or 20 or 30 bucks every semester, and they pay for the salary and the air conditioning and the lights, and that's that. And then you can talk history. And for every opinion that you've ever heard of about this history, there are 17 others. And then you have the fun of discovering the splendid pleasure of learning for learning's sake. No tests, no, none of that. Just wow.
Richard, on behalf of the OSHA Lifelong Learning Institute, I thank you very much for being here today. Really appreciate the stimulating talk we had. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.